The Athletic.
Instead of taking up that gym membership that you wouldn't use even if the gyms were open, how's about subscribing to The Athletic for just £4 a month? You'll get unrivaled football coverage with analysis and in-depth features from the very best writers around, exclusive Q&As with Athletic staff, and ad-free versions of all The Athletic's podcasts, including this one. Find out more and sign up today at theathletic.com/leagueshow.
John Yems.
That's it. That's the intro.
This is the Totally Football League Show in association with Paddy Power. Hello, listener. Thanks for dropping in on our weekly EFL natter. We will, of course, get to the Football League action, but we had to put Yemo at the top there, even though his Crawley were in FA Cup rather than league action. Fabulous win against Leeds, John. Is that one in the eye for your critics on this pod?
I'll give them monkeys.
Thanks, John. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams here, by the way, joined by the former Arsenal, Stevenage and Southend winger, Adrian Clarke. Hi, Adrian.
Hello, Matthew.
Clarkey, the rose between two thorns today as we reunite Saturday's Quest combo. Sam Parkin's been on our screens more than Jermaine Genus recently when you're hosting the one show, Sammy.
No, that's not possible. I'd like the Channel 4 gig alongside Tim Lovejoy if it's going at some stage. That would be my one.
Sunday brunch, you got the look for it.
Yeah, I am Simon Rimmer.
Finally, we welcome back Michelle Owen, who is completing the big three, as it's known in the industry. Quest Saturday, Five Live Sunday, Totally Football League Show Monday. Michelle, you must have been absolutely delighted when the Cheltenham v Mansfield tie you were covering on Sunday went to extra time. It was really warm this weekend.
Oh, when Alfie May scored in the 73rd minute, I was so happy. I was like, 17 minutes left, and they've had about 20 shots. They're not going to get another one in 17 minutes, are they? So, yeah. Little bit chilly, but a nice unusual hat trick to complete. Do I get a ball like on Soccer AM?
Abby says yes. So
okay, great. Look forward to that. Something to highlight these dark days.
Normally we do a performance of the weekend, but with it being FA Cup third round weekend, I'd like to hear about your under the radar performance in the cup by an EFL team. Sam, you've gone for Blackpool. Would you like to go first? Well, you have to. I'm telling you, you can go first.
Yeah, I thought quite slim pickings, really. Biggest story, obviously, Crawley. But I thought MK Dons, unfortunately, conceded late and went on to lose on penalties. So I thought Blackpool gave a really complete performance against West Brom, who obviously got their own troubles. But yeah, loads of really good performances. Lobalo, I thought, was fantastic. Grant Ward in the middle of the pitch. And the two lads I gave a bit of stick to last week, Medine and Yates, combined wonderfully for the winning goal, and also Yates got the opener. So no, I thought they thoroughly deserved to get through, and expecting better things from Blackpool second half of the season, and they could potentially be dark horses.
Nice. Michelle, you like the look of Wickham this weekend. They saw off Preston.
Yeah, Wickham beat Preston 4-1, so it wasn't even, you know, like a narrow victory or something that you might expect from a Wickham side. And they were 3-0 up within something like 25 minutes. Preston made a few changes. But defensively, yeah, they were really poor. Poor Jordan Story got hooked at half-time. But yeah, from being 3-0 up, they never really looked that trouble, even though they didn't have as much of the ball, even though it was the FA Cup as well. For a side, I thought, bottom of the Championship, yes, they had that impressive win against Cardiff recently. But to beat Preston, who are a decent mid-table Championship side at the moment, massive result for Wickham, and might do wonders for their confidence going back to the Championship at the weekend as well. I haven't really seen much about it, so I just wanted to give them some credit. And I've been doing my job interviewing Gareth Ainsworth a few times this season. And he always is sort of smiling, even though they've had quite a tough time in the Championship so far and they're adjusting to life, as the cliche is. He's always got a smile no matter sort of what's happened. And I know they're enjoying being in the Championship and things, but that result would have been massive for him and for Wickham. So I hope they get a nice draw in the fourth round, because from what I saw of that game, they were really good and very much deserve the win.
Yep, always lots of love for Wickham on this show. Clarkey, Abby had said maybe Plymouth was the one we should all be looking for, and that is indeed the one that you've gone for.
It is, yeah. No, I just think it's a terrific result for them. You have to put it into context. Huddersfield made 11 changes, having made no changes for a run of games in the Championship. He changed all 11, so they played a weakened team, but let's give Plymouth some credit here. They went out there and really attacked. Could have scored 5 or 6 on another day. And their away form's been a problem. They haven't won any matches on the road in League One this season. They've got the worst away record in the division by miles, only picked up 3 points. So for them to go to Huddersfield, to score 3 goals, to come back from a goal behind on 2 different occasions, that's going to do their confidence the world of good, you know, similar to Michelle on Wickham. So, yeah, special mention, Danny Mayer. I know Sam mentioned him the other week, said he's been well below par, and that's true, but he was on fire in this game. Couple of great assists. Camara was good, Edwards, the skipper, Opoku as well at the back. So, yeah, well done, Plymouth. Hopefully, it might kickstart some better fortunes for them on the road.
Okay, I've gone for Doncaster Rovers. They'd already lost to Blackburn in the League Cup this season, but rocked up at Ewood Park in confident mood. Did for the Championship side, courtesy of Taylor Richards' goal, but also some fantastic saves from debutant keeper Ellery Balcom, who they've signed on loan from Brentford. Tom Anderson, superb as well. And given the way that Doncaster are going, this might well be a league game next season. Right, that was fun, but we know why we're really here, to talk EFL. We'll do that starting with League One next.
At Paddy Power, we know competition for the remote control can be fierce at the weekends. So, in order to give the non-football-loving occupants of your house something to do, here are some of our top suggestions. Go for a walk. Walk the dog. Walk to the shops. Go cycling. Cycle the dog. Recycle the dog. Just go! All very good options, we say. And that's not the only one. If one leg of your 4-plus-fold acca lets you down, get a free bet on all football leagues and all markets. Paddy Power. Max free bet £10, min odds 1 to 5 on each leg, online exclusive, exclude shop bets, T's and C's apply, 18 plus, begambleaware.org.
This is the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
League One headlines. The EFL start their twice weekly testing for coronavirus. The latest round returned a staggering 112 positive cases. Wigan's prospective takeover has fallen through. Meanwhile, on the pitch, there were 18 goals across the 6 games in League One. The top two of Lincoln and Hull both through, whilst Accrington moved into the playoff places with their win over Charlton. And that is the game with which we are going to start. Stanley have played the fewest games in the league, just 17 matches compared with Burton's 22, yet it's they who sit in the playoff places after Colby Bishop's brace got them the win on Friday night. And that is a simply magnificent name. I think it would work for lots of different things. Could be a type of cheese or a small village in the Cotswolds, maybe. I'll have half a pound of Colby Bishop. Same in Stilton. Kilo of cheddar, please. The Black Bull Pub. Oh, yeah, that's in Colby Bishop. It's just down the A457, that kind of thing. Really good. To the match, Sam, you were there. Accrington Stanley, 17 games in. They're 6, only lost once since October. That was by the odd goal in the 4-3 thriller. Is this legit? Are they proper promotion challengers?
Yeah, to answer your question. I think Colby Bishop's strike partner, Dion Charles, is a good name as well. Sounds like an American crooner, maybe.
Or a Rover dealership 50s, in 60s. Ealing or something.
Yeah. They're a really good team. And I suppose I've maybe been guilty of it in the past, maybe during their promotion from League Two, of talking about the togetherness of the squad and the work ethic. And all of these things are true still about this Accrington side. But this is a really good football team. They're playing 3-5-2. They play out from the back. The two outside centre-halves get forward and are really good on the ball. Nottingham really impressed me. And in the middle of those two, you've got Mark Hughes, who's a former teammate of mine. And I spoke to him over the weekend. And he says the position suits him down to the ground. He can just organise. He's a loud, excitable scouser. He can orchestrate proceedings from back there and go and attack balls and defend and do what he does well. But it really complements the other two. Pritchard's got great quality on the left. McConville, we've always known, is a great footballer. And I love the front two. Just the endeavour, the attitude of them both, and so aggressive. Oshalaja and Pierce tried to outmuscle them on Friday, and it almost just spurred those two on. You could see them just rolling their sleeves up. We'll have a bit of this. And they were the big difference on Friday. I thought Bishop's second goal in particular was wonderful, beautiful finish. And the defence as well, the clean sheets, 8 and 11 now, they're looking really strong. So yeah, certainly put them down as potential, well, certainly playoff contenders. Maybe it's going to be too difficult to get into those automatic positions, but going brilliantly.
Clarkie, the owners of Accrington Stanley rightly get a lot of praise. Andy Holt, the chairman's very active on Twitter, and he generally has a lot of sensible things to say. Do you think John Coleman gets enough credit?
Nah, probably doesn't, does he? He's not that high profile. He likes to just get on with the job, doesn't he, John Coleman? And what a job he's doing on what we know is a really, really limited budget. I think his recruitment's been terrific again. Some excellent loanees, not least the keeper, Nathan Baxter from Chelsea. What a good pickup that is looking. Sam just referenced the clean sheet record, 8-11. He was brilliant in this game as well. So yeah, he's got a good eye for a player. And it's clearly that the fire is still burning in John Coleman. He's been around forever, hasn't he? I mean, but he doesn't seem to be losing that hunger or going stale. We often talk about dressing rooms listening to the same voice for too long. They've listened to his voice for a long time, haven't they? But there's nothing stale at all about Accrington Stanley. So yeah, well done to John Coleman, absolutely. And I echo everything Sam said. I really like the two wide centre-halves, Burgess and Nottingham. Nottingham was great the other night. So yeah, it was a professional 2-0 win, that.
So Coleman's mustard then, Michelle, but Lee Bowyer not going quite so well, I think it's fair to say. Accusing his players of jumping out of tackles, calling them way too soft. This doesn't normally end well for managers.
Yeah, we had his post-match, didn't we, Sam, on Quest on Saturday evening, and couldn't quite believe it when I heard what he'd said on Friday night. He was asked if Maddison was seriously injured. He said, "I don't know, I don't care. You've got a player who's jumping out of tackles," and then he says he got a knock before that. "If you do that again, you're done." It's like, it's not holding back, is he? I think he's under quite a bit of pressure from the fans, what I've read. Some people saying he's lost the plot and things like that. Yeah, they're not where they wanted to be, are they? I mean, if you go back to the start of the season, I did a couple of games, I was really impressed, given the uncertainty they were facing in terms of ownership and things. But yeah, recently, since that win against Wimbledon, it's not been particularly pretty for Charlton fans. And Lee Bowyer, I don't, if that was my manager saying things like that about me, I wouldn't even want to play for him, you know. It's not even indirect, it's straight at that player. If you're Maddison, you're thinking, wow, okay, I don't want to play for you again, you know. And it sounds like he's going to have a scan or something, so it's not like he was making it up. And I know things are said in the heat at the moment because managers stand there and we go out and we interview them, you know, 15 minutes after the final whistle and emotions are running high, but I don't think there's any excuse to chuck your players under the bus like that.
Yeah, weird one. Let's move on to Lincoln 1, Peterborough 1. Sam, you were on Sky for this one. Doled up to the nines, looking very swish. I appreciated the way that you changed that up later. Late night TV audience, smart casual look for Quest. Very good. Tax deductible as well, isn't it? Which is the good thing.
Talk us through the handkerchief, Sam. It was an interesting choice.
Was it a pocket square or a handkerchief, first of all?
It was a pocket square. I think it might be my dad's, or it could even be my granddad's. But I've got a number of burgundy ones, so you obviously haven't noticed that it's always burgundy in that regard. But it's got a little bit of green in it as well, which I always enjoy. And the burgundy's to match my shoes, which are my pride and joy, the churches, which Danny Gabaldon must have had a monitor at Lincoln when he was commentating, because he just texts me, "Great shoes!" ! That was it.
Yeah, but you didn't even wear them on Quest, did you? Or did you? I can't remember now.
Oh, you wanted me to wear them, Michelle.
Yeah, and you were so proud of them, but you wouldn't put them
on. Put the Claire Rayners on for the more laid-back Saturday night vibe.
Only good enough for Sky, those shoes. Can't believe it.
It's good to see that the influence of Tony Soprano on your life goes all the way down to your threads too. We should probably talk about the game. Lincoln left-wing George Grant's missed penalty. They would have gone 2-1 up instead. It finished 1-1. Michael Appleton back on the sidelines after a bout of coronavirus. Nice interview with him on Thursday's show, if you've not yet heard it, by the way. Also, he could be Alex Neil's cousin, I think. I mean, he's not. He just looks a bit like he could be. Sam, Brennan Johnson was a big topic of conversation in the aftermath of this game. Is he going to be recalled by Forest, do you think?
I think the noises are that he's not going to be, but if I was Chris Hughton, I'd have him back lively. He'd have been back a couple of weeks ago. So, yeah, I think for Lincoln's chances, it's imperative they keep hold of him. That said, they've obviously signed Rodgers from Manchester City, who came on at the weekend. Johnson obviously having to play down the middle because Hopper wasn't available, which I think had quite a big effect on Lincoln, a bit of a bearing on the outcome, because I think they're a different proposition with him. But Rodgers is maybe been signed just with what you've just said in mind, Matt. And he looks, I've seen him in the Youth Cup. I'm sure you've seen him as well, Matt. Not rapid. He's a bit more of a kind of, he's a bit more graceful with the ball. You know, he's got a bit more guile rather than being lightning quick. So he was okay when he came on. But yeah, potentially he's a replacement and not someone to play alongside Johnson. But yeah, I thought the first half, Peterborough, miles in control, and maybe the, I wouldn't say it was disorganisation, but maybe the way Lincoln started the game was a product of the build-up, which obviously saw the manager having COVID and a number of the good players missing as well. So a very good response in the second half after Peterborough bossed the first period.
Michelle, I mentioned the missed penalty. It came after Nathan Thompson's handball, his second yellow card. Couldn't really have any complaints, could he? Could have gone for the first tackle.
Yeah, it was, I mean, Sam was saying on Saturday night, it was the first tackle that sort of got him in that bother, really, and he was lucky to stay on the pitch after that. But yeah, if you're ever going to debate the handball law, you don't need to debate it with that. It was a massively unnatural position, wasn't it? And then George Grant on the spot, you know, you maybe put a quid or two on him to score that, because he'd only missed one so far this season. And well, to miss like that from 12 yards, yeah, he's going for the top right-hand corner, which is, I guess, ambitious. Just get it on target, although Newport got on target and were terrible, weren't they, last night? But yeah, when George Grant stepped up to take it, I thought, okay, you know, they'll take the lead here. But yeah, misses it. Lincoln not beating any of the top six this season. I suppose it doesn't matter massively if you can beat everyone else, but, you know, let's say they do end up in the playoffs or something like that, then you don't want to go in with that record, do you? But I was pleased, like you said, to see Michael Appleton back. And from what he'd said, it had been quite nasty. And I think his partner had been quite unwell with COVID and they got a little one. So if you just sort of think about everything that was going on for him in the build-up to this game, and then to sort of get your team out against a team in and around you, it's a lot to be taking on at the moment. And really, they should have gone away with the 3 points when you got a penalty and you're playing against 10 men. I think actually, he'll look back on it and it's a big missed opportunity, isn't it?
How will Peterborough reflect on it, Clarkie, do you think? And where are they at just now? Unbeaten in three in the league. So does that mean that that wobbles behind them, or are you yet to be convinced?
No, well, I think there's more to come, but they're just in a slightly strange place at the moment. Obviously, no game for 25 days. That's going to have an impact. Maybe that did affect them later on in the game. Come out of the blocks flying, and then they sort of tailed off a little bit, didn't they? And obviously with their best player, Siriki Dembele, wants to leave. Put in a transfer request. There's interested parties. I think Newcastle, Fulham, Watford, all sniffing around. So would he start? Would he be left out? And he did start him, and I don't think he was that good, really. He certainly didn't look fully focused. And that's an issue, isn't it, for Ferguson moving forwards. Does he use him while he's got him? Or does he just take him out of the team? And, you know, they brought on Ricky J. Jones, teenager, and he looked quite sharp. So yeah, tough decision ahead for Ferguson there. I don't know with Peterborough. I think there's a lot more to come. Only one, not scored more than one goal more than once in the last eight games. And when you think about Peterborough, you think goals galore. So something's not quite right. They've petered out a touch, but I'm sure they'll come again.
Let's go on to Gillingham 0, Burton 1. New manager bounce tick, Burton winning just their third game of the season under returning boss Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank. A new manager bounce usually means a bit of a shake-up to the lineup as well. Hasselbank giving a debut to Hayden Carter, joined on loan from Blackburn and sort of scored the goal. Always nice to have a Hayden in there. What have you noticed, Michelle, about how Burton have changed in the couple of games Jimmy's been in charge for? They seem to be getting that clean sheet thing rolling again, which was so key in his first spell.
Yeah, 21 clean sheets in his 50 games in charge in his first spell. So it's definitely the way he likes to play, which might be surprising when we think of his playing days. Added a centre-back, changed formation, just looked so much more solid. Just looked hard to beat. And that's, I guess, when you come into a club or rejoin like he has, the one thing you want to do is sort of stop the rot, stop conceding goals. They were conceding so many a couple of weeks ago. And to get 3 points as well, we were saying when he went to bed on Friday evening, what more could you want? Clean sheet and 3 points. It's a wonderful start for him. Ben Garrett made some decent saves as well. They added the centre back in. Be interesting to see if he does want to bring any more players that fit how he wants to play in this defensive style, or if he feels he's got what he needs. But it just seems to be a nice fit. And if he can, you know, if you look at the fixtures they've got coming up, if you can get clean sheets out of them, considering how they've been playing. Was it Oxford the other week? They conceded 5 against, you know, in the space of the next weekend with what he's seen. I don't think he was in charge for the Oxford game, from what I've heard. I think he was sort of back in the stands.
Yeah, he told us that afterwards.
He definitely swerved that one, Michelle.
Yeah. If they weren't, however. And they conceded 4 against Wigan. They conceded 5 against Lincoln. So look what he's come and done in the space of a week. It is quite impressive. And Ipswich on Saturday. It's this Saturday coming, isn't it? Be interesting to see if they can keep it up. So interested to see how he gets on. I would actually fancy him to keep them up this season. I mean, it's a promising start, isn't it?
Sam, you get the serious question. Who'd win in a fight, Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank or Steve Evans? Trickier than you think, isn't it?
No.
No, he's not. No,
Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank would destroy him.
Jimmy would destroy him in I don't know, 20 seconds?
Jimmy actually would destroy him by booting footballs at him from 30 yards, just zinging them.
Yeah, that's true. And he'd hit it and Steve Evans wouldn't be able to get out of the way very quickly. But I just think the underhanded nature of Evans, he'd be like backing up, oh, no, I don't want to fight. I don't want to fight. Kick you in the ghoulies and you're done for. You can't rule that out, Clough.
I think it'd be hard to topple over. Don't get me wrong. I think that he's got that sort of low centre of gravity, you know, not the lightest. It wouldn't be easy to get the sort of standing count from. But yeah, Jimmy would take him all day long.
Okay, the Athletic's ginormous legal counsellor telling me to move on pretty quickly. So let's do that to Rochdale 3, Crewe 3, the classic game of two halves. I wonder, Adrian, how does a team talk go at halftime when you're 3-0 down? Because Brian Barry Murphy doesn't seem to me like the kind of guy who'd be stripping paint off walls. It must have been a bit more measured than that.
Yeah, he does seem very chirpy, doesn't he? And he's sort of friendly. Friendly face, hasn't he, Brian Barry Murphy? Look, he's had some practice at having to do this, because think about their last home match. They conceded 4 in the first 47 minutes to Gillingham, actually. So that's 2 games running where they've not started until the second half. So something isn't, you know, I'm not saying he's not preparing the team properly, but they're starting matches really, really badly. But look, I think, and for that reason, having been through that Gillingham experience, to then be 3-0 down and to have the resolve and character to come back, I actually think that's really, really encouraging for Rochdale fans. It tells you the players do care, tells you they're together with the manager. And it was a really, really good comeback. I mean, I don't know what they'd do without Matty Lund. He's not meant to be scoring goals. He's got 8 this year, but he's primarily he is a box-to-box midfielder, I suppose, but really he's just there to sit in front of the back 4. So he's been a bit of a hero of late. So yeah, look, Rochdale are a very, very strange team. Crazy form. Last 4 games, 1-4, 5-0, 1-4, 3-3. I mean, yeah, who knows what's going to happen next. They've got Charlton, haven't they? So, yeah, maybe expect goals in that one. So, yeah, and one other thing on Rochdale and Brian Barry Murphy. He's had the courage to pick an 18-year-old keeper. Now, I don't know if Sam's ever played with an 18-year-old keeper in the EFL during his career. It's very, very unusual for really young lads to be given a chance between the sticks. He's on loan from Manchester City, Bazunu, and he's done okay, I think, even though they've conceded a few. So he's got the courage to play one or two younger players too.
You ever had that, Sam? Teenage keeper?
Yeah, Shane Supple at the brilliantly named Shane Supple at Ipswich Town, who I think famously kind of walked away from football in his mid-20s. I think it was when Roy Keane was there. Just fed up. It's a really interesting story. I think he just got disheartened by some things in professional football and went back to Ireland and done various other bits and bobs, but was still playing. And I actually saw him play. I think it was St. Pat's. I'd have to look it up. But I went over in that tournament last year when there were teams in England, Scotland, Ireland all playing against each other, if you recall. And I went over and it was against Sutton United, and I digress here, sorry everyone, but he saved like three penalties and was unbelievable. And that was his final season, so he's retired once more, but he was brilliant. And the other one, Christy Pym, now Peterborough, who played a few games alongside me for Exeter. So, yeah, two really good goalkeepers, and Christy's gone on and looks like he's potentially going to go even higher.
Before we move on from this 3-3 thriller, we've had a question from Q, who wants to know, any more on the situation between Cardiff and Crewe on Perry and G? A rather awkward and morose situation, says Q.
Well, I think that the Crewe have rejected the bid out of hand. But they're boxed into a corner. I think that Cardiff are likely to get their man here, because obviously Perry and G isn't available at the moment. He's suspended, but he's out of contract in 4 or 5 months' time. And for them to get something feels like it might be better than to get nothing for a player that I think is destined to play at a higher level. The beard has been labelled disgusting by David Artell. So you see what he thinks about it. Neil Harris has just sort of battered that off and said, look, they're entitled to think what they think. Yes, we are tracking him. That's all I'll say on it. So I think if Cardiff go back with a little bit more money, they'll probably get the lad. Of course, it depends on Perry if he wants to push for it or not. But yeah, I think he's destined for the Championship. He's a good player.
In the Sam Parkin derby, meanwhile, shot win for strugglers Swindon over pre-season promotion contenders Ipswich. Some sensational goals in this one. We'll get to them shortly. First, though, Michelle, I've heard a lot from the chaps over the last few weeks about what they think about the EFL's attitude to COVID, etc. The camera cuts to Paul Lambert, still recovering from it, looking ridiculously ill, sat in the freezing cold. What on earth was he doing there?
Oh, I said the same, actually, when we were watching it. He did not look a well man, did he? And the fact he was sat up in the stands as well, it seemed, would suggest that he's in no fit state to sort of be on the touchline and running things from there. He'd probably been better off at home, but then his conscience is probably thinking, oh, I need to be with the team and I need to be helping them. I mean, I know you've discussed it. I just find it staggering that we've finally had some mandatory testing last week, which has proved so many positive tests. And twice weekly testing, you should have been in line all along, shouldn't it, really, especially with the way things are now. And I guess when you see someone looking like that, it rams it home, really, because otherwise Paul Lambert would be fit and healthy, and it wasn't nice. It was sort of like, oh, this is where we're at, and no one's sort of immune from it. And we've heard about football players being unwell, and we're hearing that more now. So the more testing we do, the better, I would say. And I know there's been disruption for many teams because of COVID, but if that's what it sort of takes to have the testing there, then that's what we've got to do. I think he started suffering with COVID before Christmas, Paul Lambert, so it just shows how long it can knock you off your feet for. But then during the game, that wouldn't have made him feel any better either, would it?
Well, he shouldn't have bothered, because Ipswich fans they've got no sympathy for him. I just think that they just hate him. They just really don't like him. And I think that the Norwich connection is definitely a factor, and also the style of football. The town fans just not having him at all. So I think he should put himself first, really, rather than putting the club. But it's a personal decision, isn't it?
Yeah.
Go on then, Sam. You've had to wait a couple of minutes. The floor is yours. Seven changes from John Sheridan. Boy, did they work.
Yeah, because the supporters have obviously been really down on the team recently, and such optimism if you go back to the start of the season. Our shows, I was really boyish about Swindon's chances under Richie Welland. So it's been a really limp couple of weeks and months, but all the changes just came off, all the new blood. I presume John Sheridan had Palmer at Wigan. He came back in. Scott Twine obviously was wonderful, and all the new signings, Travers in goal, Thompson at fullback from Brentford. I think he ended with three assists, although one of them was a 5-yard pass before Scott Twine smashed in the greatest goal of all time.
Bit of room here though for Twine, who took it on. It's genius.
Which I don't think Michelle was there, but I was. You all Twine, yeah. I don't think Michelle was there, but I was just off to the toilet.
You thought it'd gone over.
I saw the attack building down the left hand side, and I screeched when that hit the back of the net because it looked like it was going 20 yards over. It was unbelievable. And have it on good authority from my friend at BBC Radio Wiltshire that it is modelled on Cristiano Ronaldo, this. He has practised and watched and learnt his trade in the Swindon Academy. So brilliant. The fans will love having him part of the team now after what he's done at Newport. They'll have to keep hold of him now because I'm sure Lee Power's phone will be ringing. But it was just really cohesive attacking-wise, but defensively as well. I'd really noticed the improvements there. Big fan of Dion Conroy, who Matt, you've watched with me at Chelsea's academy. They seem to be really compact. Ipswich did breach that a few times, but with runs over the top, but they couldn't play through Swindon, and there's a real difference there. And if they can tighten up, then we can be optimistic that they can pull away from the bottom. But a great day for the fans, and obviously a lot of these new players that were bedded in the same team.
Yeah, it's becoming quite worrying how me and Sam are thinking along the same lines. I was watching Quest, albeit I didn't watch it live, but I was taking notes as I was watching it, and I'd written down Cristiano Ronaldo-esque, that guy. and then you come and wheel out that line. So a bit scary. On Swindon, yeah, it was brilliant, but those centre halves, they wouldn't fill me with great confidence. No. They looked a little bit dodgy second half when Norwood came on, and they struggled to deal with those longer passes. But yeah, it was a great win for them.
So to the game that was due to be played on Boxing Day, but then Sunderland got coronavirus, so it got postponed. Then Hull's original opponents for this weekend, Wigan, also got the Rona. Incredibly, common sense prevailed. The EFL quickly scheduled this game for the weekend. Obviously, it finished 1-1 because Sunderland were involved. Clarkie, you're armed with stats.
Yes, I've been in touch with my good buddies at Opta because Sunderland just always draw, don't they? It feels like they always draw, and most of the time it's a 1-1. So I thought, well, I'll have a little look at it. So this season, they've drawn 9 games from 19, which is a lot, and 6 of them have been 1-allers. Last year, 8 of their 11 draws were 1-1. So, a lot, but not crazy. 2018-19, 15 of their 19 draws, which is just ridiculous, were 1-1. So that means that they've had 29 1-allers in 2.5 seasons, which is just sounded crazy. So I got in touch with Opta and said, like, they must be miles ahead, and they are. The only two teams within any kind of touching distance of Derby and Millwall, who've had 22 one-allers across the last 2.5 seasons. So Sunderland, congratulations. You are the best at getting one-all draws. Well done.
No, Clarkey, congratulations. That's the best thing you've done in 3 seasons. I was absolutely hanging on to every word there. Loved it.
You just zoned out, didn't you?
No, I
Lee
loved
Johnson's
it, honestly.
Adapting it into a PowerPoint presentation as we speak. Sure.
That's mental. 29 1-1s.
And I did even take it a little step further. So I wanted to know whether they were comeback one-allers or throwing games away one-allers. And I was disappointed because there's an even split. So you can't really label Sunderland one or the other.
Hey, I want to know which player has had to endure the most of those 1-1s. Can you imagine?
I was going to say Lyndon Gooch because it gives you an opportunity to say Lyndon Gooch. So let's go with Lyndon Gooch. Let's get some odds with Paddy Power here, played by our own producer, Abby. We're going to have another go at building a midweek acca because at the time of recording, there are some games that might actually go ahead. Adrian, let's have your selection for our bet, please.
Yeah, well, I touched on it a little bit earlier, actually. Charlton play Rochdale at the Valley. Charlton's defending's been poor lately. Centre-halves both at fault for goals last time out against Accrington. Rochdale letting goals for fun. So both teams to score, please. I think Charlton against Rochdale, definitely their strengths lie. Well, more so Rochdale than Charlton, but I don't trust either defence. So yeah, both teams to score.
Abby, odds on that?
Yep, it is deemed likely 3-4.
Nice, brief, factual. Michelle, what's your pick for our bet, please?
I've gone for Bournemouth to beat Millwall. Millwall had a pretty poor result last time out against Coventry, and I know they draw a lot of games. They did beat Bristol City, but they've been all over the place this season. Bournemouth recently have impressed me. I know it was the FA Cup, but nice emphatic win against Oldham at the weekend. Before that, they ground out a win against very difficult to beat Stoke. And even though they had that blip against Brentford, I think a team like Millwall, even though they can be stubborn and hard to get past, I fancy Bournemouth for this one with the bit of class they got on their side to overcome them.
Abby, is a Bournemouth win deemed likely?
It is indeed 4-6. So put those two bets together so far, we're on 2-1, which is very low for our Accas usually. So this probably plays into Clarkie's hands.
We'll see as we roll on. Right, still to come League Two, but next, transfer.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic. This is the Totally Football League Show with Matt Davis Adams.
It's January, and that means that it is transfer time. Yes, that iconic glass break can only mean one thing. Stone Cold Charlie Austin is on the move. Sadly, QPR didn't announce his loan signing at 3:16 like West Brom did. Sam, you must be happy to see him back. I know he's a hero based on what he did in his first spell there.
Sir Les is my hero. Let's get that book.
A hero, not your hero.
Yeah, some of the younger fans. Yeah. Some of the younger fans. Obviously, I know Charlie well and done some bits and bobs with him due to our Swindon connection. So, yeah, you talk about natural goal scorers at championship level. Charlie is right up there last few years, and obviously it's not maybe translated to the top level in the last couple of seasons when he's had the opportunity. But yeah, my one concern would be you still need that fitness, that energy in your legs when you get the shooting opportunities to put them away. And he's coming, you know, towards the end now. So he's not going to, I wouldn't say, play every minute and dominate games. But if he's used correctly by Mark Warburton for the right games, I'm sure he'll score goals. I'm sure he'll score goals. And he'll have that added motivation coming back to Rangers where he essentially fired them to promotion and I think got around 18 goals in the Premier League, something like that under Harry Redknapp. So he should be really excited and hopefully he can, you know, rediscover some of his best form because really, really like him. And it's been a brilliant story coming from where he has done.
What about Dykes and Austin together as a front two? Because the last few times I've seen Austin in the flesh, he hasn't run around much. He's sort of conserved his energy. If he plays up top on his own, I'm not sure how much he'll offer. But if Dykes does the running for him, is that a potential? I don't know.
I think that's a really good point, yeah. Because I think the criticism of Charlie recently is that he's been coming a little bit too deep and trying to get on the ball and such like. And we've seen that. We've seen it with Harry Kane at the moment. We see it with older players when they're coming towards the end, having that other string to their bow. But Charlie's just a goal scorer. He's one of the best I've ever seen. You know, when he turned up at Swindon, it was so natural for him. Yeah, I'd put him well in front of Macaulay Bonn, what I've seen from him in a QPR shirt. And Dykes has been really isolated. So if Mark Warburton is bold enough to go for it, yeah, certainly those two would be the two I'd have in tandem at the moment.
Yeah, another loan signing that I've obviously had an eye on. The two-time European champions Nottingham Forest tying up Anthony Knockhart, figuratively, for the rest of the season. Also apparently looking at Krivinovic and Whiteman. I think it's fair to say they probably have to shift a few out before they can bring many in. Any others that you've noticed, Clarkie?
Good name, the Watford player that came in very early, Zinchenko. He sounds a really interesting player. Adam Leventhal was talking about him previously with us and on The Athletic. Stevenage have done a bit of business down in League Two, obviously the bottom of League Two. A few experienced players, Chris Lines, Luke Norris, Matty Stevens, all coming in. So I think that's encouraging for them. And I just wanted to give a little sort of doff my cap to Rabbi Matondo, who's joined Stoke City. He stuck it from Schalke, and he stuck on his Twitter account his location, Stoke Alona. Which I thought was very good for a player from overseas that, yeah, he doesn't know about these things. Yeah, well played, that man.
I just wanted to mention Matty James as well, because I know he's had a bit of a tough time of it where he's been, and I think he could go to Coventry and maybe have a little bit of an impact. I think the Coventry fans quite liked him when they saw him. I saw someone say he oozed class, and fans were really excited about him going there. So fingers crossed for him that he gets a run. And he's always showing for the ball as well, so I'd like to see him have a good run.
Sam, Carl Winchester.
Yeah, I think this is a really interesting signing, to be honest. Seen loads of him over the years. Never really stood out, but he's very versatile. Mark Cooper was talking about him being a championship player the other day, and obviously Sunderland have taken the plunge and taken him from Forest Green. So I think in a Sunderland midfield, which is very workmanlike, he could potentially slot in there. Not a huge goal threat, but certainly a box-to-box midfielder, can chip in and create. So I'd be really keeping an eye on that to see how that plays out.
Good. More of that as the month rolls on. Next, though, League Two.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
League Two headlines. Three games called off in the division due to weather, which I still just love because it's not because of a deadly pandemic threatening to tear apart the very fabric of our society. Southend, Port Vale and Cambridge all won games. And in the Southwest, Exeter's Matt Taylor questioned the commitment of his players after their performance against depleted Sheffield Wednesday in the Cup. As we mentioned earlier, that sort of thing usually goes down pretty well. Tradition dictates that we begin with a Southend win.
Under some pressure here. In much improved performances of late from Southend. And just look at that. What a start for new signing Hackett Fairchild. On his birthday, providing the perfect start here for Southend United.
This time it was against Barrow. Rico Hackett Fairchild stepping straight out of a Dickensian novel to bag the third-minute winner here. A victory that was even more impressive given that the Shrimpers had to play over half an hour with 10 men to beat their fellow relegation strugglers. Adrian, it's on.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, they've made it interesting, haven't they, Southend? I mean, Southend can't drop out of the league. But it was looking almost nailed on, wasn't it? But credit Mark Moseley for sticking with it and for just working hard on the training ground, building some confidence, working on the organisation of his team. And finally, he's got a squad to work with now. They're still young. They're still a bit green around the edges. But they're listening to him and they've shown good character. I mean, that's four home wins on the bounce, which is really good. And they didn't have a lot of the ball in this game. They rode their luck again, but not for the first time of late. It was gritty. They held on. They showed excellent resilience. So yeah, well done. And yeah, great start for Hackett Fairchild. Scored just after 3 minutes on his debut. But I just wanted to mention Greg Halford, actually, who got sent off in the game. He's 36. He was given a 1 month deal, which I believe has expired now. So it'd be interesting to see what happens. Not a great time to get sent off at the end of a 1 month deal. So he might be out of work for a few weeks until he's out of suspension. I don't know. No, in Southend and their financial troubles, that might be quite a sensible move on their part. But anyway, I just think it was a good pickup because he's been out of the game for nearly 2 years, and he's just come from nowhere to get a contract, and he's really helped them in the last few weeks with the odd cameo role here and there. So yeah, him and Alan McCormack have added a little bit of nous, shall we say, and yeah, it's definitely on. I think Barrow, Grimsby, few of the other teams are beginning to get a little bit edgy, which is good.
Yeah, on Barrow, Michelle, Michael Jolly, kind of the opposite of nominative determinism, I suppose. If he was under any illusions about the scope of the job that he's got there, he's not anymore. It's going to be a big one to keep them up.
Yeah, I mean, it was the cliche provential six-pointer, wasn't it? And not going to do much for their confidence, that one. I look at Barrow and, yeah, just in terms of their form, it's not looking very promising at the moment. Big job on his hands. I thought when they got that result against Tranmere, it might springboard them a little bit, but I haven't seen much since then. I thought, again, going further back when they beat Cheltenham, you're like, oh, okay, you know, there are some green shoots here, but they're right in amongst it. And like Adrian said, it is so tight down there now. You know, it's going to be the teams that can put just a little run together just to pull themselves away a little bit. And yeah, they'll just be looking at fixtures, trying to see where they're going to get those results from.
They're going to have to tough it out, Michelle, because they came up playing a lovely brand of football and they want to still do that. They're very much a possession team. But not every game's like that. I mean, Sam will tell you. I mean, a lot of the football in League Two can be really scrappy. And I think in this match, Southend kind of deliberately made it scrappy, stop start, and it just killed Barrow's style of play. They just couldn't get any kind of flow. What they need to do, I think, is have that plan B under Jolly and be able to tough it out to get results when matches aren't free flowing.
Port Vale 3, Grimsby 0 was another big game between two out-of-form teams. Taylor, two managers here. Port Vale without one, Grimsby with a returning one. So Port Vale get a pretty thumping win, Sam. That, I'm guessing, be pretty painful for John Askey to see. Have you ever done that? So manager gets sacked, then you go and win the next game convincingly. And if that happens, do you feel a little bit of guilt for the old boss?
Doubtful.
Footballers with a conscience. You're gonna laugh.
I always felt partly responsible when managers went. I can't remember it happening too often during the season, and normally I would make a point of texting the manager, especially if they brought you in. I remember doing that with Joe Royal, and Joe was really nice in response when he could have said, I wasted 500 grand on you, you imbecile. and you owe me some of my severance or whatever. So, no, I can't remember it happening too many times. And I think it'll just be relief. Reading about the game and seeing what I did, it looked like in the first half, it was kind of, let's revert to what's got a success in the past, wide players, balls into the box, Tom Pope causing havoc. Second half went a bit more conservatively and got over the line. So it's a start. And yeah, Frank Sinclair, for one, has done it the hard way, Matt, because he's been coaching a number of years, hasn't he? Really low down. So I hope this sacking of John Askey isn't, you're going to have a knock-on effect for Frank, and maybe he can be afforded the opportunity alongside Pugh, who again had a top career.
Yeah, he's had to put in the hard graft working with me and you on Chelsea TV, that's for sure. But they won't be getting carried away, Michelle, will they? Because they're coming up against a team sort of in even worse form in Grimsby. And there's another, a new old manager, but one with a massive task on his hand.
I know, and two horrible results to start with. Okay, Cambridge, maybe you can be like, oh, okay, it's Cambridge, you know, they're competing for promotion at the moment. But yeah, Port Vale, that was so big for them because they jumped a few places up. And like I said, like that's what a win can do for you with it being so tight down there at the moment. But it wasn't pretty. Port Vale sort of sussed them out, found out how to go down the wings, put balls in the box. And with everything that's gone on at Grimsby recently, you know, Ian Holloway walking out for speculated reasons that he didn't like how the new owners had approached them, and what's going to happen with the new sort of majority shareholders as well. It's a time of uncertainty at Grimsby. So Paul Hurst has taken a really tough job there. I think, you know, the relationship between him and the owners will be important, especially if he wants to tweak a few things as we go through the January transfer window, and that they're in the bottom two right now. And even though they're only 3 points away from safety at the moment, they've played the most games down there. So it's a big, big ask. You know, Southend below them have played two less, and everyone around them at least has a game in hand. So, yeah, really tough times for Grimsby.
And they need to get it right quickly, Michelle. They've got Southend, Scunthorpe, Barrow and Stevenage.
Yeah,
coming up. So
like, this is now. Yeah. This is their season, isn't it? You know, yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah. So Paul Hurst has absolutely got his work cut out. They've signed a new left back in the last week. Ex Lincoln City left back Sam Habergham. But yeah, it's going to be quite tough because he hadn't played for a while. So to attract the footballers of the calibre they want to get them out of this mess, that's going to be a hard sell too, isn't it?
Sure is. Last game we'll have a look at is Cambridge 2, Harrogate 1. Sam, you were full of praise on Quest. Quest sponsoring the show this week, by the way, because it definitely ought to be sending us some money. On Quest, where you can see the EFL on Quest every Saturday night at 9 o'clock, Sam was full of praise for Wes Houlihan. You could tell us a bit about how he did in this game if you like, but I'm quite interested to learn from you and Clarkie. If you ever in your career had a player who'd been at the top and then dropped down the leagues, like Wes Houlihan has, you know, played in the Premier League, he's played international football, then they come into League One, League Two, and they really impress you with their attitude. I know you're a big fan of Neil Ruddock from a kind of dressing room perspective and being with the lads, maybe not so much on the pitch. Was there anybody in your career you thought, wow, he still really totally wants to be doing this?
God, you love putting me on the spot, don't you? It just all moulds into one, Matt.
The amount of TV appearances you've done this weekend or your career?
No, the amount of missed chances and mundane days on the training ground with people coming and going. I suppose at Luton Town, we had the old Dad's Army one summer, which was great fun for me because I was injured and I was like, right, who's next? Who are we getting today? Jeff Hurst, when's he turning up? We had Don Hutchinson, Chris Perry, Paul Pesci-Salido, and the one I'll highlight here, Paul Furlong. What a guy, Furs, when he came to Luton, and must have been late 30s, surely, maybe even touching 40, and immaculate physique, absolutely ripped, trained every day like it was his last. And I loved his Lucozade Nutri-Grain in his wash bag after training every day, which is like kind of modern, but quite old school and sweet at the same time. That was what was keeping him going. But yeah, I learned a lot from Furs. I remember him saying to me once when I'd missed a chance, and I was the type, especially when I wasn't scoring regularly, when the injuries came, to beat myself up about missed chances. And Furs just looked at me and said, what are you thinking about the one in the second half? And I say, yeah. He said, well, you scored two last Tuesday against Gillingham or whatever. Think about them. Why do you think, you know, and he had a really strong mindset. Taught me a lot. And so he was one probably that was a great example. Similar to what Wes Houlihan's doing for Cambridge, if we want to bring it back to current days.
That was an enjoyable tangent. Let's see if Abby keeps it in the final edit as we move to our midweek ACCA with Paddy Power. We've had the selections from Adrian and from Michelle. Sam, what have you gone for?
I'm going for Salford to win at Scunthorpe. Didn't have a game. I think that Scunthorpe lost to Stevenage last time out. And basically, just because of all the Mansfield stuff with you last week, Matt, and then Mansfield went and beat Salford, I'm just going to back Richie Welland and his guys to turn it around in style this week and go on a romp home in the division.
What's the odds on that, Abby?
That's a romping 6-5.
Wow, okay. Well, Sam mentioned Mansfield. I've decided that they're my team in League Two for the rest of the season, so I'm having them to win at Oldham, please. What can you give me on that, Abby, and what does it do to the ACCA?
Nothing to do with the fact that your dog is called Clough.
He's called Brian. Disrespectful.
Oh, sorry. That's it's...
Nick Miller's cat's called Clough. My dog is called Brian, yeah.
There's a Clough in there somewhere. Mansfield are 11-8 to win this one. Put that all together into the accumulator and we are at 14-1 for our four picks.
Wow.
And you can find these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. And prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. And when the fun stops, stop.
Right, normally we'd end with a question, but in reference to the cheese footballer Colby Bishop and Dickens Hackett Fairchild, we're going to have a game of Watford or Notford. Listeners who've been to a live Totally Football show would have played this game before. Very simple. I'll give you a name and you have to say whether they are a Watford player or not. They're either, by the way, a Watford player or a current UK politician. You get a couple each. Michelle, we'll start with you. Henry Wise, Watford or Notford?
Notford.
Watford. It's the son of Dennis. He is a 21-year-old midfielder.
That's such an MP name, though.
It really is, isn't it? Abby's very pleased because she came up with that one and I nearly nixed it on the basis people might know as Dennis Wise's son. But anyway, Adrian, your first one. Sunny Blue Low Everton. Watford or Notford?
That's too ridiculous to make up. So it's got to be Watford.
That is Watford. Well done. Sam, James Sunderland. Watford or Notford?
I'd have got Michelle's. James Sunderland. Notford.
Correct. He is the Tory MP for Bracknell. Michelle, this is your final one. Bim Afolemi. Watford or Notford?
It's like the reverse psychology, isn't it? I'm gonna go for that, Notford.
Correct. He's the Tory MP for Hitchin and Harpenden. Here's your final one, Adrian. Bailey Spencer Adams. Watford or Notford?
Yeah, all day long, Watford.
Yeah, former Arsenal defender, so you probably knew that anyway, didn't you?
Yeah.
Okay, kind of cheating. Never mind. Sam, you can put us all out of our misery and finish this off. Jonathan Janogli. Watford or Notford?
For the tie, Notford.
He's correct. He's the Conservative MP for Huntingdon. Fucking hates it.
You know your MPs, don't you, Matt? So.
That will just about do it for us this week. Many thanks to Michelle, to Sam, Adrian and Abby, and of course to you too, listener. George and Ali back here with Extra Time on Thursday. We'll see you same time next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and by following at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of the Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on the Athletic app. The Totally Football League Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.